A very good evening and welcome here to Terrace Talk this evening. It's Tim Moynihan sitting in for Ivan Hurley. And well, we've a brilliant show lined up as per usual. Of course, we'll be looking back at the three Munster club finals the weekend, and they were quite fruitful from a Kerry point of view. And also tonight, in the second hour, I'll have Mark O'Shea in studio. Of course, Mark, the launch of his book, Kerry Family, A Football Dynasty. And tonight we'll just generalise. We'll chat about his youth and moving on to the Kerry setup. And now he takes up his part in management, the manager of the current Kerry minor team. If you've been to any sporting event over the weekend, please do not hesitate in contacting us tonight in the usual mediums. You can call us on 066-7123-666, WhatsApp or text 083-300-3300. And of course, I'd hope so, that Mark might bring a couple of books tonight and we'll get him to sign them. And, well, we'll put a bunch of comments in a hat and we might get John Kennedy, Liam Brosnan or Mark himself to pull them out. So that's all for later. But I think we'll start, I suppose, where it was very fruitful, as I've just mentioned, our Kerry clubs doing so well in Munster. First of all, John Kennedy, I welcome both John and Liam once again.
Thanks, Tim.
I looked at a photo of you today from Friday night. And
looking well, Tim.
Dashing, yeah, dashing, they well. Call it. And a smile. But I know that's a humorous side. You are looking well, by the way. But John, I was the thought of all those players together, the number of All Ireland medals, and I said to myself, "Aren't we so lucky to be from Kerry?"
Yeah, Tim, it was a fantastic night in the Gleneagles. You know, it was a, you know, the legends that were there, the 75 team, the four in a row team from 78 to 81 and the 84 to 86. Great credit to the county board, Patrick Sullivan and John Dwyer and Aileen Foley, Liam Lynch, Morris Mahoney, to name a few. They did a brilliant job. Great presentation. And I suppose, you know, Dahi O'Shea, our own Dahi O'Shea, was absolutely magnificent. You know, he had the feeling, he's a Kerry man, came out with a Kerry jersey on him and he set the tone. He was absolutely brilliant and a great show. And, you know, to see the players that we hadn't met for a long time, I suppose it's the bond that's there, Tim, between those players. You might meet him for a year, 6 months, 2 years, and then when you meet, it's the same as you were speaking yesterday. But I think two people in particular on the night, the great Eddie Tatler O'Sullivan, hadn't met him for a bit, met him there, great to see him there and in great shape. And father of Patrick, the county chairman, and great Crokes man. And then Pat O'Shea from Cremorne, you know, selector and a great GA man going back the years. Those two in particular, like, you know, but all the legends, all the great players. And I suppose we're all getting old, but, you know, it was a fantastic night and a great tribute to the county board for planning it, first of all. And, you know, it was a night of sadness. When you think of the great people that are gone, like Miko Dwyer, the great Miko, but you know, the players, John Egan, Tim Kennelly and Paddy Shea, you know, legends of the game. And it's nights like that that they're missed. Bernie O'Callaghan, maybe, you know, Mort Kelly, selectors like that, and you know, when you start naming names, but like these moulded us as players and as people. And you know, it's amazing. I think it was said it numerous times on Friday night that there's guys with 8 All-Ireland medals in their pocket, there's guys with 7 and down to 1. It doesn't matter how many medals you have, you wore the jersey, you put it on over the shoulder, you represented your parish, your county, and you were part of history. And, you know, there's others taking on that mantle now, but delighted to be there and delighted to have the health to be there, and, you know, hopefully that we'll meet again in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, and I'd echo those words, Johnny. When I was growing up, and you know, I suppose the 70s, winning that All-Ireland in 75, and of course what a year it was, all under 21s and minors, and everyone wanted to be the next whoever, be it the Ogie Mourns, the Paddy O'Shea's, God rest him. And yeah, and I think including yourself in the for the three in a row, you give us some great memories, and we really appreciate that. We don't know how lucky we were in Kerry. And I'll say hello to Dahi as well, because I know Dahi listens to Terrace Talk on his way back from his today's show on RTE, and I think we shortened the journey. But now, don't get a swelled head out there now, Dahi, but you did a brilliant job from what I hear, and fair play to you, always carrying the Kerry flag.
Tim, if I may, there's one guy, Kevin Griffin, was at the table with me, the great Kevin Griffin from Glenbeigh, selector with us, but his son Cahill, he never misses a Terrace Talk. He's back now listening to us. And keep listening, Cathal. And all I can say is that he's one of our biggest fans, both Liam and myself. Never misses a show. Tuned in. Volume up in case he'd miss anything. And all I can say is happy Christmas, Cathal, and to all the Griffin family in Glenbeigh.
And I know Cathal as well, Tim, and he probably knows more about football than myself and John Doe around this table.
And just a quick question on that, John, is it only yourself and Liam that he...
Yeah, he didn't mean, they didn't mention you now, Tim, but in fairness...
I'd be missing a lot at the time.
Yourself and
Liam, that's where we might start. Like, you know, every week here we Terrace Talk, I suppose it's always the prominence is Gaelic football. What a weekend we've had. And I suppose we start with the teams that were out first that set the tone for the whole weekend. Ballymacallaghet, I suppose it was new ground, new territory. I watched them in the semi-final, but we can be everywhere. We were on our way to Rakeel for the Ungaeta game, Ambrose and myself. What a win, especially in the second half, a huge performance.
Fantastic win, Tim. 3-12 to 8 points. Played against the elements in the first half, and I think that's where the game was kind of, where they set their tone, really, from the word go. You know, the first 2 or 3 minutes, all right, Lehan and Hanlon kicked 2-2 pointers. You know, even when we were sitting down watching, you were kind of saying, there's going to be a game here. But Ballymac settled. You know, they got points from, you could say, Aidan Breen, Dara Broderick, Michael Reedy, who was a massive addition home from Dubai. You know, his pace out of defence, his attacking, and his composure around the top of the D there for Ballymac was excellent. And I suppose just coming up to half time, that goal by Donald Daly then. No, it kind of settled Ballymac. They went in a point up against a strong breeze. You know what Mallow's like, Tim. We've been over there for a few games. They can be a howl of a breeze there. And they came out in the second half then, and you know, players, especially, not the, as we said, the elder statesmen, like Dan Shea, fullback, Aidan Breen around the middle of the field, you know, and all these young guys then, you know, the Jack Joys, the Marty McGivigans, you know, they were flying. But I was talking to Michael Broderick, their selector, during the week. And you know, usually you don't ask too much because we don't want to know. They want to do their own thing. But the one thing Mike did say to me, he said the training had went very well and that they were focused. And you could see Ballymac, they were focused, well organised. You know, they were hitting the sidelines, they were punching the gaps, they were creating space, they were creating overlaps. And that all came to fruition then because Martin McGivigan had got his goal, they got their penalty, Jack Joy hit the back of the net. You know, so all in all, they're well deserving of their win. And you can see, you know, from their game the 2 weeks beforehand, the Cobwebs were blown off. They're getting into their stride now,
getting more ruthless,
heading towards Christmas now. They can enjoy it. I presume they'll be training over the Christmas, and look, they'll be looking forward to an All-Ireland semi-final now.
John, the hurt of the last couple of years, I'm sure that's a driving factor as well for the Ballymacallaghet club. They have the power in numbers. We've seen this year they went on their own at certain levels, the under 21 level. We were without them, Liam, in St. Kieran. So they have the numbers, but as Liam alluded to there, that they have the experience as well of, he just mentioned Daniel Shea and Aidan Breen, and the youthful thing. You can beat pace, you can beat youth, you can beat young fellas that back themselves to score. They're taking a lot of boxes.
There's no doubt about that, and they have a great management team led by Ian Blake. You know, I suppose, and the build up that there, we read about, you know, the Sills family presenting jerseys, all that. That's a driving force.
Is it?
You know, they're hidden things, you know, and they'll never forget Luke, his father Tony, a selector. You know, emotional stuff. But these guys played with, you know, the Aidan Breen, look, he's an example to everybody. But you go to the younger brigade, Martin McKivigan, Jack Joy, you know, Christy Lean made 2 or 3 great saves and goals. You know, all these, it was a team effort, and they got 1-4 without reply against the wind. And they nullified Buttevant and they kicked on. The goals were crucial. You know, Anthony O'Neill, the Buttevant defender, slipped. Aidan Breen got the ball. He flicked it into Donald Daly. He stuck the goal. That was a big score. And then McGivigan and Joy from a penalty. And a great victory for them in uncharted territory. But it's great for the club. And you know, they had their hurt. They had their near misses. But all that's forgotten about now.
And Liam, there's another side of it as well, that, as we said, and we've been with teams to Croke Park, club teams, and it's a real parish thing, but I was out around the Ballymacallaghet area today, but to see the pillars of, you know, in front of houses and the flags up and coming into Christmas, and I think it adds to the whole occasion, but every parish person or every, and it's a big parish, Ballymacallagate, they all get behind the team.
They do, and I suppose this competition with the last couple of years, you know, these when Kerry teams get out and they're successful, it does make, I suppose, John, there's a great buzz, and especially when you win, because yesterday we had a lovely Christmas fair in Curragh, but I was doing a bit of traffic control and Fionnán Fitzgerald walked in, our councillor, and I congratulated him, and he said, "I floated in the gate." That was his first words, but he said, "We're on a high in Ballymac," and he said he didn't realise how much of an uplift a victory like that would give the people of Ballymac. He said it was electrifying last night around Ballymac as well. And you can see it, your own club, because it's a and just going to the Dingle boys that gave the interview yesterday when they were asked, was winning in All Ireland, what was it like compared to yesterday? And they picked yesterday over it. So it's amazing. It means a lot for your club.
And you're doing it with guys that you actually
that grew
up,
up with.
Not everyone you grow up with goes off and plays with Kerry. Even for the players in with Kerry,
yeah.
You're guys you went to school with, you're soldiering, and it's a massive achievement.
It's a very special kind of a bond as well, you know, because you're under 10 trainers over the wire, you know, they're all outside, your parents, everything, and it's a special time, and I think clubs really enjoy it. And I suppose the players probably enjoy the winning side of it, but it's when they sit back and they look at it in maybe years to come, they'll say it was a fantastic time. So yeah, it's something that is special here in Kerry, and that's why we've been so good in the last couple of years, Tim, and what am I saying, the last 10 or 15 years winning these competitions, because we have damn good footballers down here.
John, the big thing as well coming out of all this, that everybody's questioned Kerry's dominance and that it's unfair, and I was on with Jerry O'Sullivan this morning, Kerry Today, and my take on it is, like, what Kerry do, the system works, and you can complain all you like in the other counties, but why not try and copy what Kerry are doing, yeah, for the structure of it? There's always, when we win and win well, question quick. Yeah, everyone is saying it's outside, yeah, the county, yeah, it's unfair, yeah, but what's your take on it?
I agree with you, Tim. I heard you this morning. You were spot on. You know, we're doing our job right here in Kerry. Sometimes people can be critical of the board and critical of the fixtures and so on, but I can tell you, they're on a great show. The competitions are, we said it here last week in the build-up, that the standard the Kerry teams are playing at going into Munster, it's a huge advantage.
Yep.
They're all competitive. Junior Premier, Intermediate and Senior. Seriously competitive at every level. There's a level for everybody, and well prepared. I think the structure in Kerry, we have the envy of a lot of counties. County League is very competitive, you know, and even without the county players. But the championships are so keenly contested. You look at the people involved with the teams, the calibre of people, the standard that they're at. It's fantastic, and that's why we're winning, you know. And that's, you know, you said about Cork today, and you were right. I mean, Cork should have their structures in place, and we're not here to talk about Cork. We're here to talk about Kerry, in fairness. But like it was a comfortable victory for Ballymac. Likewise, Gaeltacht in the end, and then of course we'll talk about the Dingle game afterwards. But we have good structures in Kerry. We have serious competition, and that's why we're.
And they're serving us well.
They're serving us well.
And you look at the top, Tim. We have 39 senior All Ireland's won. So that's at the very top. So we are a very good footballing county. So no matter what division you are going to come across very good footballers down here. And I think, like you said this morning, it's up to the other counties to look at it and see what can we do. Why should we be cutting our sides down?
But just it, to works. Make other, it works.
Works.
And
works
I'm sure
us.
It served the yeah. Kerry, the county of Kerry, as inter-county football. It served it really well. The next step for Ballymacallagate, they go into the All-Ireland series. You know, I know they're probably still celebrating last night and today with their great victory. You'll have that build up again. You're coming into funny time as well, as in
January,
for
yeah.
constructive training. You're coming into January. It's going to happen very fast. Have Ballymacallagate the equipment, the tools to give this a right go now, the All-Ireland series?
They have, Tim. You look at from their goalkeeper out to the defence, very solid round the middle of the field, experience. Now, Dara Bradrick, I think, has come on leaps and bounds this year. Now, his fitness, he's kicking, he's scoring. He's a real leader around the middle of the field with Aidan Breen. Up front and with the likes of Donald Daly, Niall Collins, Marty McGivigan, Jack Giant, these guys, they have the scorers. And we saw it yesterday, you know, in all the games, that if you have scorers with the new rules, it's a massive bonus, and I think the Kerry teams have that going forward. So I think it's going to take a very good team to because I know Ballymac, at the way they're going to be training through the Christmas and stuff like that, they'll leave no rock unturned as any of the Kerry teams. But Tim, they have the tools to go on to win this competition and to win the semi-final.
John, I take it you echo those words, but sometimes it's probably the one competition as well that when you meet a team from Ulster or Leinster for that, or Connacht, it's at a different level again, because you're getting the best of the best out of that province. But there's something about the Kerry setup, you grow into it. I suppose the carrot is dangled for both teams that you would hope your final is in Croke Park. But semi-finals are there to get to the final, no matter what. And every game is so... Every backroom team now has a measured performance. You know, you mightn't be presented with loads of fluency in football, but they want to be in certain segments of the game where they're going to get over the line.
Yeah, that's you're spot on. And I think that, you know, first of all, it's to manage around the Christmas. That's what it is, you know, they're set their stall, enjoy the few days and then get back and, you know, keep them on the boil as such.
Young fellas are different now, John.
Young fellas are different,
They'll be in the gym, they'll be looking after themselves compared to 10 or 15 years ago. Young fella might go missing for a week. Yeah.
And as well as that, like, you're 60 minutes away from Croke Park.
Yeah.
And like it has been said numerous times, but that was the best thing that happened club football in the country. You know, Sean Kelly brought it in, that the teams will go on to Munster and All-Ireland and get to Croke Park. Huge carrot. And, you know, all the three Kerry teams are only 60 minutes away, but I've no doubt, I'd agree with Liam, they have the equipment. You know, the injury seemed to be right. Derek Keane was back at the weekend.
Big addition. Mike
Michal Reedy coming back from Dubai.
It's huge.
He was driving into that defence the last day, into the wind, you know, leading by example. He just didn't get the trip over to be part. He wanted to drive on. That's the attitude, and I think that there's huge experience on the line. There's a lot of experience on the field, and there's a lot of inexperience on the field, but they're learning.
And the management team is learning as well, because it's a new ground. It's new. They learn from the previous year that, you know, getting so close didn't happen for them. And so even this year, I suppose, the breach was a big thing. Suddenly, the margins are very tight between failure and success. And if you're at the right side of it, you grow in confidence, grow in character.
You're dead right, and the margins are so tight, there's so little between teams. But I think, you know, being beaten and that hurt, that drives you on. And you know, they have the leaders out there. They showed it the last day, and they're Munster champions. And no doubt, they won't want to hear it, but I think that they're going to take some beating, regardless who they meet. Because for a junior premier side, they've talent in every line. Tyke Brick leading by example from centre back. Teague tough, you know, a hurler as well, but Teague tough, driving in. Ball winning, their physical ball winning abilities, but they have the scoring forwards, like Liam said.
And the new rules, Tim, suit the Kerry footballer. That is the big thing that we've seen in the county level. Yeah. The skillful footballer, it suits them down to the ground.
Isn't it so sad? I know we could have another programme about this, Liam, that we were deprived over this for the last 15 years of players with skill, attack and flair. Now we're applauding, and we'll speak about it when we're chatting about the other games, we're applauding players that can kick a ball from the arc, outside the arc, and it was over the bar. 25 years ago, it was a given, even if you were a club player. Being brutally honest.
Yeah.
But it's good that skill is being, I suppose, presented to us again.
Oh, yeah. And look, not only for the players, it's made it for the supporter to watch all the games. Now, it's very enjoyable to sit down watching a football match, because, Tim, you know as well as I, we had gone to matches where, and yourself and Ambrose would be commentating, you would nearly want to plug it out because there'd be nothing to talk about. Whereas now, every game that you go to, there's always talking points, and it's very enjoyable. And you can pick out the good footballer as well. You can pick out the good defender, you can pick out the teak tough midfielder, and you can definitely pick out the good forward.
We're going to be talking about on the Gaeltacht's win after the break. But a question I have to ask you, John, it was asked by two different people. I suppose they think I know you better than they know you. There was a mention today, a connection with a club, a county that you've already been there and at the highest level. Is there any truth in the rumour? And I'm not going to mention, people know where you are throughout your career since you retired from playing with Kerry. Is there any truth? There's a rumour surfacing that John Kennedy could be taking a ferry again.
No, Tim, there's no truth.
You'd be disappointed, Tim.
I'm anchored in SD now, Tim. I'm stuck in the development out there. I'm involved in the GA club, and there's a lot of not me. I'm in the periphery, but I won't be travelling across the Shannon. I had my day and I enjoyed it, and great people over there, but not now anyway.
Well, I admire your honesty. So those two, I'm sure the two people.
That's an
spoke
exclusive
to me.
Now, is it?
That's an exclusive. He's not crossing the ferry. We take the first break of the evening.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel, Kerry's first B Corp hotel. Sustainability, community and warm hospitality under one roof.
You're very welcome back here to Terrace Talk later on in the programme. After seven, I'll have Mark O'Shea in studio as he speaks about his book, A Kerry Family, A Football Dynasty. Should be a very interesting conversation. But at the moment, I have John Kennedy and Liam Brosnan in studio as we look back on the weekend's Munster club finals. We spoke about the Ballymacelligate. We'll have to touch on the Gaeltacht now, but I'm going to go over to Niamh Daly. Some comments coming through by way of text and emails. And likewise, through the phone. What have you for us, Niamh?
Okay, so I have one in here and it says, I'd love to have your panel discuss the elephant in the room about the Junior Championship. A Division 1 team in Kerry should not be playing in Junior Championship. It's unfair to genuine junior teams. Also, Terrace Talk, I would like to hear the opinion of the panel on the ref in the An Gaeltacht match. In my opinion, he was the poorest I saw in a long time. And another message coming in, what a weekend of sport. Three Munster final wins in football and two more teams reaching cup semi-finals in basketball, making it three Tralee teams, Warriors, St. Brendan's and Tralee Magic, and that comes in from Siobhan. And then I have another one kind of on that, and it says, has the three grades been won before in Kerry, and if it has, when and by who? So we'd have to get the brains going on that one.
That's a question for you, John.
good question, Tim, in fairness.
Get on to Brendan Fuller there, he does the ones there on Fridays, doesn't he?
To find out the questions. Yeah. He'd be on about shoe polish and what's the best way.
We'll have to Google.
Just a quick word. I know we kind of touched on it about the grade, how we are probably delighted with the grade here in Kerry, but there's also internally in the county, Liam, you know, that comment there by Niamh said, I'd love to hear your panel discuss the elephant in the room about, you know, Division 1 teams winning a junior championship. It's unfair on junior teams, teams playing. You remember years ago, you could have a team down three, four, five, that could be winning a junior. But there is a competition for those clubs.
There is, and realistically, Tim, Ballymac couldn't win. They're a junior team. They couldn't win the junior competition. So that's why they had to, you have to win it to get out of it.
Yeah, true. You know, so that's why there's steps of the ladder.
Yeah. So realistically, that answered anyway.
John Kennedy, on Gaeltacht, and I think we mentioned it before a ball was kicked in the championship, even here in our own county. They seem to be the best team equipped to go further. But first of all, let's go to the game on Saturday evening in Rakeel. It was under lights. There was a mention there by Niamh on one of the messages we received that they'd like their opinion on the ref and the Gaeltacht game. There were a few decisions. Now, we don't want to hammer refs in any way, but I suppose if you're a Gaeltacht supporter or likewise the opposition on Saturday evening, they might have questioned a few decisions. Just generalising before we get into the game, am I reading it wrong, but is there a lot more pressure on refs now? And Liam might come in on this because he's done umpire in a few high profile games in recent weeks as well. There's serious pressure now on refs. Every decision, the movement is fast by players, the intensity, the new rules. There was a huge mistake made in yesterday. I'm not saying about the winner, but early on in the half in the Dingle game, we'll chat about that later on. But is there pressure on refs now?
Look, Liam has been saying it here for quite some time. It's about getting two refs, and I think that it's huge. The amount of the game has speeded up unbelievably. There's no break now. When there was a free before in the old rules, you'd hold the ball, you'd put it down on the ground, you'd go back, you'd whatever. Now this so long ago, it's gone. The ref he's under savage pressure. He has that split second to make the decision. Do they get him right all the time? No. But generally, overall, they balance out. Do you know, we'll speak later on about the bars and their attitude afterwards. But I think that the pace of the game, the fitness of the players, and the continuous movement is getting more and more difficult. At the highest level, Munster finals and, you know, county finals and club, it's a savage pace. There's huge preparation going in. I don't think any of the games the weekend, the ref cost the defeated team the game. I don't think so. Was there decisions in all three games that could have gone the other way? Of course. But, you know, they're human, and I think it's about maybe looking at it. We've made great strides. the rules have enhanced our game. They've certainly made them more attractive. High scoring games. The 2-pointers are a breath of fresh air, because the 7 or 8 point lead now is whittled away with 2 or 3 kicks.
I'd like to say, from my own point of view, no different to doing commentaries, you could get slated at times. You wouldn't want to take much notice. Myself and Amherst don't take a lot of notice of the negative stuff, but there's a lot of positive stuff out there as well. And I'd just like to say, from my own point of view, anybody puts their name, be it forward for a manager, a selector, a referee, a guy talking into this mic here in front of me, I admire them, because you're letting yourself open. You've no protection whatsoever, because people have a view. All I'd say as well, that, and John, the operative word there, Liam, was human. Like, can a ref, no different to a player can have an off day. Can a referee have an off day? But it's mother nature.
Without a doubt, Tim. And the one thing about a referee, like, he could have 100 calls and he could get 98 of them right, but everyone will walk out the gate thinking about the 2 that he didn't get right. You know, so it's a hard game now to referee, and I've been on the record with that. Since the new rules have come into play, it has got harder, because there's so many rules going in the referee's head, there's so much happening, and like John said, teams are putting so much effort into it now. They're getting quicker, stronger, fitter, the ball's moving twice as quick, you know, so at a higher level, as you come up for these campaigns now, I do think that the second referee, like that Dingle one now yesterday, and we'll speak about the Dingle one, but like, there's nothing wrong with going to a team over there.
Correct.
To check it, you know, because it's a big call.
Well, if you could change,
you know, I think the referee got it right, but it's a big call. Let's go and we'll forget about
and
it.
And I think there's a line drawn under it.
Line drawn under it, didn't you? And I think you can do it. You can't do that in the county league game in Cora or Ashdi,
because you don't.
I don't think there wasn't much hassle in county leagues this year. I've seen a lot of games. There wasn't, but when you see it, things get more competitive, and there's bigger things to be won here. And it gets I won't say nasty, but everything is scrutinised, and I think the referee is always getting the blame.
New rules, Tim, as well. Like, we were at the game in Tralee the when Mark O'Connor kicked the ball out.
Correct.
Yeah. You
know, and there was a lot of people that didn't even know
what's going on here. Like, we genuinely didn't know it.
Yeah.
And it happened in the Narcarry final afterwards. But like, the players don't know some of the rules, because there's so many. They have enhanced the game, definitely, but there's people up on the terrace and they don't know the rules either. And that's not, with no disrespect to the people up there. We're very knowledgeable people, but there are rules there, they're not so sure.
And the same as ourselves, from, like, we could say something in commentary and they say, do the boys not know that? So yeah, it's a generalised thing, and players don't know it.
Yeah, you imagine the referee on the field has to make that split second decision.
Oh yeah.
And you have 100 rules inside your head like that. And what brought that to my head was the Mick Kerry one, was the double breach.
Correct.
Like, I heard of it months ago, but when it happened in front of me, it never dawned.
What you're thinking?
Dawned to me, and it was a double breach. I said, "Jeez, what's that?"
Yeah.
But you know, so
it's definitely night for another, and I'm sure that Ivan won't mind me saying that if you get a few referees in here one night, just openly, and I think as well that there's frustration with referees. That you don't want a load of negativity going your way all the time. Suggestion would be not to have a ref on the panel like they have on the Premiership, and to answer queries and questions about decisions. Yep, a very good point to have on a panel when we're questioning things here. And that's what I just alluded to. You queued me up well there, Niamh, for that point. We'll move to the Dungarvan game quickly. Solid throughout. I was commentating the game with Rosie. Serious midfield for Cathal Bugley and Aidan Walsh. Guys that power through the winter sod where it's heavy, the scraws on the top of the toe, and they came out winners there as well. But I know he was sent to the line later on in the game. But the standout player for me was the cornerback. I love cornerbacks that go through the wall for you. I'm not saying take man, Keanu Morocco. And he was brave. He had, and if there's such a thing, and I don't want to be disrespectful to the player, if there's such a thing as having a player in your back pocket, that's what he had. And that I mean that in a complimentary fact. No different than the corner forward probably had a bad day, but I think he epitomised all that was good in the Gaeltacht. And Breno Bugley at centre back was just a county player playing with his club. Boxing clever, and likewise the Tomás O'Shea's of this world, Ian O'Connor, and to mention quite a number of players. It was a real team performance, John.
Yeah, a real team performance, you know, and it's we've said this for some time, and I agree with you. They're well equipped, really physical, fit, a dogged defence, Tim, man on man, touch tight, and hitting really hard within the rules now. But real physical. You know, it's in the mould of the great Paddy O'Shea, and Keane O'Murcu typify that. You know, some of the tackles, Jesus, they were bone shakers, but he was outstanding. Brian O'Begley, he was involved in the two goals. He was involved in two other goal chances. Carl O'Begley, we've said about him.
2 point specialist.
This guy is certainly somebody that we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubt. Aidan Welsh has been a real find for the Gaeltacht. His experience, he's been there at the highest level, his coolness, and, you know, the physical power again.
He's a serious option. He's changed the whole mantra of the midfield thing for the young girl. You know, you go back to the great mid, like the Darrow Shays of this world, but I think he brings that sort of physical aspect to the middle of the field. Liam, I love forwards that don't go out into the car park when they get a ball to the corner flag. I love John Egan, God rest him, when he...
Shoulder.
And the Moss O'Shea.
Yeah.
And no different to Enoch Cunacour taking his goal as well. I love guys that just go straight down the line.
Yeah, and powerful. And it's very hard now with like we said, with the new rules. You have a one-on-one and you dip the shoulder and you're going towards goals. There's no stopping them because they're powerful. But when you're on, it's funny when you're going about the old great Gaeltacht team, it's the same names. You know, the Canadas, the Carduffs, the McGarrels, the Shays, you know, it's nearly coming twofold around again. You know, and I was just reading about Aidan O'Shea today. You know, was it 10 minors came into the squad this year?
Yeah.
You know, so that's a great lease of life coming in. You know, and you've the elder fellas there.
Great
heads there as well, you know, so you could see how Gaeltacht are going so well.
John, just one final thing before we leave that game. Gaeltacht are, as I just in the intro, they're well equipped to go. You know, well, they can only take the next game as it comes, but they've such a great balance and power and the knowledge that I know Dara Kinnaird, chairman, he's also on the sideline, but they have great heads. Fergal O'Shea is the manager. That speaks a lot, speaks volumes for where the team is going to be. You know, preparation. Yeah,
they have a plan. They have a structure. You know, after the county final, there was great plaudits given to Darrow Kinnaird. You know, coming in as chairman, the structures he put in place, Fergal Shea. These guys, they're steeped in GAA tradition. You know, they won't get carried away with a victory. They're back thinking about the All-Ireland semi-final already, their preparation. You know, they respect the opposition. You could know that in the post-match interviews and all that. But these are a team that are equipped to do well at senior level. The intermediate is a difficult one to win, particularly Northern teams.
As it's proven with the last couple of years for Kerry clubs.
Yeah, but they're in the semi-final now and they're there in Mirror.
And they're really embracing it. As we just mentioned the parish earlier, Liam, Bally McElligott, and no different, we're going to be speaking about Dingle now, but they're really embracing it, meeting them coming down off the stand.
They're a sticky bunch because we've a Mary Bradley in Curra. And she showed up yesterday with her Gaeltacht jersey on,
lovely.
Was at the game. She's living in Curra, but she went to the game last year. So they do follow their own.
And we don't get it with every club in Kerry. We were right planted in the middle of supporters, Ambrose and myself for the commentary. But to hear the Irish language, their culture, and the belief they signify everything that's good in Irish. And it's lovely to see them, you know, on the higher stage. And we wish them very well. Before we have a couple of minutes to our next break, I just want to start off the Dingle game. It was probably the most fascinating game of the weekend in the sense that it had everything, you know, from the goals and no different to, I suppose, the decisions by the referee. You were looking at Mark O'Connor in the middle of the field, you know, coming up against, you know, the Brian Hayes of this world. And of course, they have Ian Maguire there as well. Dingle did it the hard way, John.
Yeah. You have to say to him, looking at the game, could you see Dingle winning it? Not really. But they're stuck in there. You know, they're a resilient bunch. They kept in touch, even though when the bars went 7 points up, they had a few chances to put it away. They didn't take it. Paul Gainey's goal was crucial. But I think the performance of Dylan Gainey in the second half, he was simply outstanding. Maybe quite enough in the first half, but he took the game by the scruff of the neck. Tom Sullivan, you know, Colin Gainey. But like they worked their socks off. And every score they got, you could see it was draining the energy from the bars. The game was there. And I suppose Stephen Sherlock, 16 points.
Yeah.
What a display. To end up on the losing side. But you look at it, there was two or three chances they had. There was a free from the 45. He was kicking them off the foot, off the hand all day. He put it on the ground. There was a 45 afterwards. And you know, they had one or two more chances. They didn't take them. But Mark O'Connor's leadership around the middle. People say today that Maguire and Brian Hayes dominated the middle of the field, but
they managed the kickouts though.
They managed the kickouts exactly.
39%.
Yes,
of the one of the Barrett's kickouts.
And I thought that they nullified Brian Hayes' influence because he was one of the top players throughout Cork and in the other two games.
17 or 18 goals scored this year.
Correct.
Long, like, yeah.
He was nullified, and you know they managed it quite well. Their game management was excellent.
Yeah, and at times around the arc as well. It was probably difficult. Maybe whoever was watching it or listening to it, there was three around the arc for Dingle. Then they crowded the space behind, so they were getting onto that break. So they learned. I'm sure there was harsh words going in at half time. Liam, John mentioned it there, like, should a player be scoring 16 points?
No, Tim, you wouldn't really want to be doing something about it, all right? But I suppose we all heard Mark O'Connor's response to it. Was it Tommy Rooney, I think?
He said they
couldn't afford to take Tom Sullivan from the role he was doing to put him back, but they eventually had to. No, so
is it a dangerous role? Like, you're talking a man kicking 16 points. He did five two-pointers in the first half. like, you would automatically think going into the game, your county star, Tom O'Sullivan, going straight on.
Yeah.
But I can understand as well that Tom's, I suppose, his whole play, he's actually the driving force. He's the guy that's driving the forward play.
You think back to the county final, what he did in the county final down here, he's driving forward.
And plus the fact that Stephen Sherlock stayed inside at the edge of the square at times.
Exactly.
If Tom was pinned back, he couldn't do his runs.
He couldn't do, yeah.
But is it a dangerous game?
Oh, it is. It's a damned if you do and damned if you don't, if we're the management. Because if Dingle came away losing yesterday,
everybody would question the management. And no different
asked.
A few years ago when Tom was marking Shane Walsh.
That's right, yeah.
He was left. But the reason being, and I think it was Jack after that said it in post-match interview, was that they didn't want to concede any goal and keep him as far away from, because these are serious footballers.
Yeah, yeah.
It's supposed to be an analyzer, Tim. He's their playmaker.
If you
take that away from Dingle, you're actually taking part of their game away.
Oh, big time.
I'm sure. Yeah.
And they're so used to it as well.
Exactly.
And then you'd be asking maybe other backs, who's the guy that you're going to put on him. But I definitely three of his two-pointers, he had plenty of room to hit the two-pointer. Wouldn't you put a fella just tag him? I nearly say to Keller, you don't have to touch the ball, just spoil him.
Just tag him, yeah.
But it's something they'll...
And sometimes when a player's in that kind of form, John, no matter who we put on him, because everything he was kicking was gone over the black spot, you could say. So then I would have been far kind of more for Tom playing his own role instead of trying to bring Tom back. It'd be like saying with Gavin White there, sure, you don't want Gavin White inside the corner back. Because you're taking away his power from going forward. So Dingle did the same, and it worked out well for him yesterday. It's a chance to take, but it worked out well for him.
They probably changed their strategy in time, but Dingle, the other thing is Mark O'Connor probably didn't have the dominance, if you were watching it or whatever, that as far as, you know, that forward play. But how many times that Brian Hayes came out of the pack with the ball and he was spoiled by Mark, is that fair to say, John?
You're spot on, Tim, and I think, you know, the last one we'll speak about it again, Ian Maguire, who was the man that turned it over.
That's right, yeah. And who was
O'Connor,
around him?
Who was around him? Mark O'Connor. The work he did, you know, I think that they had a game for the middle of the field to put pressure on, not to let him break, and, you know, Bars had no goal chance.
No.
So that says an awful lot about the defence and the setup by Dingle.
And so measured. After the break, we'll continue speaking about that Dingle game. And of course, coming up later on, we have Mark O'Shea in studio, a Kerry family, a football dynasty, the Mark O'Shea book. That's all to come later.
Radio Kerry Sports, always proud to support Kerry teams. Like on Gaeltacht.
He's been stood up there by two players of a hot ball, but he's still trying to sort it through. This could be a goal!
That's
a goal! It is the goal by Éan O'Connor, the spiritual leader of this whole Gaeltacht side.
Radio Kerry Sports, your club, your journey, your station.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Sponsored by Meadowlands Hotel Tralee.
And we're looking up the clock. 50 seconds, Ambrose. You'll be smoking the woodbines now.
If they win this, they're doing it the hard way.
Oh, they're doing it the hard way.
Two very bad misses.
Put that ball forward. Pat O'Connor gets a belt of his shoulder. And oh, he knew all about it as well. But they pick it up, St. Finbars. They're fighting for every ball as if their life depended on. Now they try to force the turnover. 30 seconds left here at Semple Stadium for Dingle to hold on. Well, to get an opportunity even for St. Finbars to hold on. High tackle there. Where's he going, ref? Surely a free out, and it's a free out for Dingle. Now.
They need to move it. They need to move it.
Last attack for the Dingle side.
It's been moved up.
Point, and it's moved
one
up.
1 second now. 2 point territory.
Where's 50 yards? It's right outside the 2 point.
Dylan Gainey.
Wow.
This is your life.
What a pressure kick. This kick could win it.
Could win
for
it.
Dingle.
Absolutely.
They're behind. We're looking at the clock. 63 played.
63-1.
Wow. Not a game for the faint-hearted.
And it's Niall. It's just
O'Connor
Gainey.
Gainey going to take it.
This is your life, Connor.
You'd have pity for this man. And he's going to go from a one from downtown Amherst on the 45. It could be the winner for Dingle.
Could be the winner, absolutely.
It's outside the
huge
arc.
Kick.
Connor Gainey, a parish awaits for the man from Dingle.
It's a two-pointer.
Dingle surely are winners of this game. What a game in Simple Stadium. Now that ball is put out again. One last attack.
It's all over.
Dingle have won the senior club championship the hard way.
The great escape.
Conor Gainey, there has to be a statue in Dingle.
Fair play to him.
A statue in Dingle frame. What a game. What a finish to the game. John, a lot is spoken about, we said about the referee's decision, but alluded to one thing true. If you were to be technical about everything, into the second half in that game, there was a free in to St Finbarr's inside the 21, and the referee allowed it to be brought out for a 2 point, which he executed with precision. You can be technical about things. Can you talk to me about the result of the game in the sense from that one decision where he moved the ball forward?
Yeah, I suppose technically, Tim, you know, as we said a while ago there, the refs are not going to get everything right. That was one that it shouldn't have been brought out for the two-pointer. But you have to give great credit to Mark O'Connor, the way he swarmed Ian Maguire and turned him over, and the free was given. And then the rest is history. You know, they didn't release the ball. And to me, I think it's a crazy rule, being honest with you, that you have to hand the ball to a guy, you know, if you run at him or whatever. There's an ambiguity about it, and it's not clear. And in the heat of battle... But Dingle got the free, and it was all about Conor Gainey. What a strike. You know, a brilliant kick. And worthy winning any game.
I spoke to him after, John, and he said there'd be a lot more pressure if it was a side around the 21. He said because people would expect him to score it. And then he said he was quite comfortable. He said he had tried it actually in the warm-up from that particular spot, and he popped it over the black spot. What a way to win the game.
Absolutely, and we said off the air a while ago, Liam and myself, you know, they have three Gainies are up front, like, you know, any team that has those, the calibre of those guys. County forwards, they're kickers. He's done that, Paddy Corcoran was on the Radio Kerry today, he's done that below in Park and Ahasig, night after night after night. That wasn't just a fluke. He's done that, his eyes closed, and he's doing it. But I think one thing we should mention, we mentioned it off the air there, Jimmy Barry Murphy's interview afterwards. You know, one of the legends in hurling and football in this country. Fantastic, an icon of the game, but his interview was just absolutely fantastic. You know, no blame to anybody.
No bitterness.
We had chances to put it away. We didn't do it. Well done to Dingle. Job done.
And I listened to that interview. It was excellent. And he said, look, we have our bad days. We have our good days. Today was a good day for Dingle. Now they must march on as well, Liam. And we just said it there before the break that, and I think there's a few texts coming into Terrace Talk tonight and as well, that Mark O'Connor, as we know, he's a superb footballer, professional. He brings, I suppose, that professional attitude to the Dingle setup as well. He's going to be a huge loss. And I think one man has missed more than at any time during the Dingle's, I suppose, journey over the last, Barry Dan,
yeah. And Mark will be a huge loss, but I wouldn't write it off yet that he could appear in January, Tim, because if you look at all the interviews that Mark has done, you know, he's a Dingle man to the core. You know, this is a big opportunity for him. Probably, you know, these opportunities don't come around too often. So you could, they'll turn every stone they can to get that man over here in January, you know, to play for Dingle. But it depends what kind of a professional contract he is. He's a professional player, you know, so there are little things that Dingle will be looking at, but he will be a huge loss if he's not around for Dingle.
You're definitely chatting to Jim Garvey. Is Jim bringing out the checkbook?
Jim is uncontactable today.
Jim will pay for the flight surely home. But they'll have to organise something out, because he's come into their structure, into their system. You
and
know,
Barry Dan's missing, he's a huge loss,
Barry Dan, yeah. What are they going to do around the middle of the field?
Yeah, look, Mark is an outstanding footballer. He's superb. And, you know, we said that earlier on throughout the season when he came back in. He just took it up as if he hadn't been away at all. And that's, he's so comfortable on the ball, you know, his aerial ability, his kicking scores. But I think his defensive qualities, particularly the last that we saw it again, you know, people, as I said previously, people said about Maguire and Brian Hayes, but they were nullified. They weren't the true for goals. And, you know, I suppose, you know, it remains to be seen what they do. Will Mark want to play? Of course he will. But will he be released? That's another question.
A huge quarter now in football. I'm sorry, you know, when I'll be talking to Mark O'Shea later on, he'll say, Tim, it's not about quarters, it's about halves. The third quarter of the game, you know, if a game is going from you, you'll try to get 2 pointers. Dingle would be disappointed about that third quarter. They allowed a lot of ball to go the St. Finbar's way. They got a few scores as well for a team that had to come right back into it. But I know they delivered in that final quarter then. Your thoughts on that quarter? Are St. Finbar's too dependent on Sherlock?
I think they are. Kicked 16 points. The spread of scores wasn't there, do you know. And I think William Buckley, the wing forward number 10, was very industrious. Caused a lot of problems running forward, but not scoring. But, you know, in that third quarter, Paul Gainey went off. And, you know, the spiritual leader was gone. But I think Dylan's 2 pointer.
2 pointer. And Tom Sullivan.
And Matthew Flaherty had a turnover.
That was huge.
And Dylan Gainey had another turnover. They were huge because that puts life into the team. They lifted and they kicked on from there. From Matthew's turnover, they went down and got a score.
I think, and to be fair to say, and I've mentioned his name quite a lot, even during commentaries, right through Dingle's journey in the County Championship. You'd love a Matthew Flaherty in every team.
Yep.
If I had a team in the morning, you want.
Yeah.
Because he gets inside the opposition's head. He's just in another planet when he goes inside the white lines. But he worked very hard on that turnover. There was a huge one by Dylan as well over underneath where we had the supporters and the stand side, the opposite to the commentary side. They can be defining moments. We'll all look at the Conor Gainey, you know, the huge score,
yeah.
Dylan. But there's small little things that happen during a game that can...
Mikey Gainey made a big impact.
He did.
Correct.
He came in.
Won a few kickouts, showed his experience. Do you know... doesn't do panic. Vital.
How have Dingle arrived at this juncture? You know, you question, sometimes you could walk away if you failed in other championships down through the years. They were in the Munster final, it hurt, but has a lot of it to do with the backroom team as well, the additions to the backroom team?
Oh, without a doubt. Look, everyone around the table here knows how good Dingle have been in the last number of years. You know, they were always getting to the nearly team, you know, that kind of a way. But eventually they got over the line this year with a lot of injuries. And I think what really has come to the fore here is their injuries have cleared up. You know, there was a lot of needles and stuff like that. But definitely the addition of Aidan O'Shea and James Weldon, new voices in the dressing rooms. Not saying that the voices that were there were, but when you bring new voices, it adds different things to teams. And I think that probably just give that little bit of a lift as well.
And it add freshness to the whole thing. I'm looking through the glass and I see Mark O'Shea is in the house, and that is and the next hour. And but lads, you're going to stay with me as well and keep those comments coming through to us. I was told go to the first one, and we asked the panel as well about the new rules. And can I repeat that one, John, just before we go to the break? Can you ask the panel about the rules? How come the Hoother wasn't used in any football matches over the weekend? Has it not been sanctioned?
No, that's the Hoother mustn't have been working. Yeah. There must have been some type of problem because they should have been using the Hoother.
Well, that's an answer coming from...
And you're at the one there, Tim, 2022.
Liam, you should jump into politics straight away.
2022 was the last time three Kerry teams won Munsters.
We go to the break for the news.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel, Kerry's first B Corp hotel. Sustainability, community and warm hospitality under one roof.
You're very welcome back to the second hour of Terrace Talk. The first hour flew. We're chatting about our Munster club champions, Ballymacallaghet, of course, Dungailtheacht and Dingle. Now, not changing the subject, we're staying with GAA, and I have the great Mark O'Shea in studio. Good evening, Mark, and welcome to Terrace Talk.
Good evening, Tim. Good to be here.
Mark, first of all, we're talking about the book.
Yeah.
Why did it take so long?
That question.
When I say that, you retired in, what, 2016?
2016, yeah.
Was it something you thought about after, or do you think about those things after retirement?
Not really, no. Do you know what? I was asked to write one after when I retired, and I kind of said, Tomás and Dara had one written, and what's the point? You'd be kind of saying the same stuff, do you know? And So, and I think sometimes somebody gave me good advice. Sometimes when you write something afterwards, you might say something that you might regret. So that was kind of in the back of my head as well. So I said, you know what, I leave it for a while. And a good buddy of mine, Trevor Twamley, Sports and Darcy, he came to me then last year and he said, would you ever think about writing it? And I repeated the same thing. You know what, I wouldn't really want to kind of write something like the boys had written. And then he kind of said, you know, maybe you could tell the truth. This, you know, the boys probably told a few fibs, you know. So, yeah, but it was very much kind of written in the kind of with a view of talking about the family and West Kerry and the Gaeltacht and I suppose what goes with it, the coast and all of that and the Irish language. So that was the basis of it, you know, and before you know it, then you're kind of getting wrapped up in the football side of it.
It always comes back to the football.
It does, but somebody said to me recently that I don't think Kerry football is mentioned until maybe the 100 and something page. So it is very much steeped about West Kerry and the Gaeltacht and the Irish language and culture back there and the whole lot. So that's something I'm kind of proud about.
And Mark, that's the intro to the book. Your late grandparents, immigration was huge, obviously, during that period, but your grandparents, was it Tommy O'Shea,
and
met Beatrice. And Beatrice was from Sligo.
Ballymore.
And met Sligo, and you tell, no, we don't want to give everything away in the book, otherwise you wouldn't be selling the book. But it's a great story how it all happened, but I love the part there where you said about the culture, the language. Tell me about your love of the language. From a very early age, you were speaking fluent Irish. What does the language mean to you?
I suppose it's your identity. It's where you're from. You grow up with it, and you're friends, and you go to school, and you're taught Oscaige. And I suppose in later years, then it was particularly when we were playing football, it was an advantage. You know, you'd be playing. I remember in my last year playing, I was marking Kieran Donaghy in the Nunsfield in Connolly Park, and
Kieran would be fluent Irish.
I was inside full back and he was full forward, and I was talking to the cornerback next to me, and I was kind to ask Gaelga, and I said something to him, and Donny, he turned around and he says, why didn't I listen to those Irish teachers below on the green? But yeah, so like it's something that we would have used to our advantage. We would constantly be talking to Gaelga on the field, and you know, all our team talks, everything ask Gaelga. And someone says to me, you know, do you talk Irish every day? And it's not the case. It depends who you meet. It depends the characters you meet. And, you know, and it's when you go back there, it is mostly ask Gaelga, you know, and it's nice to have that.
Your dad was born in London. Your dad
and Tom were born in London.
So, and I know Paddy's mentioned several times, why wouldn't he be in the book? But tell me about those early years, from years when you noticed about football. You go across the road and you can see Paddy. It's a mecca of football, memorabilia, photos, everything. What's your earliest memories of those?
Well, we were very aware of it from a young age because we had Kerry's golden years in the house, watching this man next to me, John Kennedy, play, and particularly that famous 85 final, you know, because Paddy was captain and I was just kind of grasping it at that stage, you know. And that same team came home to Ventry with the cup, and I was lifted onto the lorry, you know, and that was my first earliest memory, I could say, really, of that great team. But in that time, myself and Tomás were kept at home. Darren Fergley were brought to all the games. They would have gone to those big games, particularly, they say, the 82 final, the five in a row, big games. And to gas, the first time myself and Tomás were in Croke Park, actually, I was there for a Gaelic went up on a tour in the early 90s, but the first time Tomás was in Croke Park was in 1996. He was actually playing in the All-Ireland semi-final in the minors against Mayo. They played Mayo in the minors and the seniors the same day. But that was our first proper day out in Croke Park, would you believe it? So like at that time, 86 to 97 obviously was a famine in Kerry in terms of football. So, but yeah, to go back to your question, Tim, we would have grown up, you know, watching all those famous players come around, Paddy, great friends with the likes of Ogie and Bomber and these fellas, and you know, they'd be after their big games socialising back to West and a few days and great times, and watching them and you know, just looking at these unbelievable players and wanting to grow up and emulate them and be like them.
And talk about emulating them, your brothers, like starting with Fergal. Some people tell you that, and they know about Fergal, that he probably could have made it a longevity of his career, but a serious injury. You know, when we see, and the man is managing a very successful on Gaelic side now. I take it you were with these guys in the back garden in the early years. and they were trying to make, harden you up, I suppose. Will that be fair to say?
Yeah, there was great days in the back garden. Two against two, and Fergal was a serious footballer. You know, he was captain of the Kerry Miners, and like you said there, he was getting trials in with the seniors going in, and then got a bad knee injury and probably never recovered properly after that. Came back, he actually got in with Kerry again. He was there in 97 for the league and got injured again for the championship, so he missed out on that. But injuries seemed to follow him, you know, throughout his career, but he carved an unbelievable career in management with the club. And when we were often going away playing with Kerry and we came back, you'd be fairly told that the standards were high and you had to set the standards, and Fergal would make sure if you weren't performing that he'd call you out in front of everyone, you know, in proper order. Yeah, so those games in the back garden, they were great battles, you know, two against two. And then when Fergal went off to college then, it was like, say, one in goals and two of us out the field. And if I was playing against Dara, he could only play with his left. There was all different types of conditions put into the game. But yeah, look,
did you know anything else other than the football?
No, there was nothing else. And you know, you look at the way things are now, and you've got soccer and football and rugby. Even if you look at West Kerry now, there was no soccer team back then, there was no basketball, there was no none of that, rugby, nothing like that. And now you've got all those teams, there's soccer teams, there's rugby teams, there's all teams back there. But back then it was just, as we call it, CAD, and that was it.
Playing juvenile football then for Fingal, was there always pressure on you to make a West Kerry team, a Kerry minor team? We saw what Darren Tomás did before you. Was that always, did that sit in your mind that there's pressure here and you need to emulate what the boys are doing?
Do you know, funny, like, and I think I say this in the book, the only pressure that was there, it was the pressure that I put on myself. There was no pressure. My father would never, geez, he never, and that was something that I'm trying to do with my young fellas now when I watch them play, is just let him at it. And it's a very hard thing to do, but he never put pressure on. If you played excellent, you know, he'd say you did grand. If you played really poorly, he'd say you did grand. He never really praised or gave out. And I thought it was a good way to, but definitely, say, the older I got, say, maybe when I, the minor year, 98, I put huge pressure on myself to try and make the minors, because I suppose my Uncle Tom has an All Ireland minor medal. Paddy was 3 years at the minors. He's a man across the table here. He was 3 years Kerry minor as well. And, you know, minor is where it's at. It's what all the young boys growing up want to do, is make the Kerry minors. That's the start. And then Fergal became captain of the minors. Dara was a minor. Tomás was 2 years a minor. So there was definitely a bit of pressure I put on myself to make sure that I tried to make the minors. And I remember the first night we played Waterford. We're playing Waterford, and this Waterford team, Charlie Nellingham was in charge. He said this Waterford team were a very good team by all accounts. And when the team was picked for the first night, I wasn't on it. I was a sub, and geez, I was devastated, absolutely devastated, and went home that night and felt I was a bit of a failure, you know. And then we were lucky to get out of Walsh Park with a draw, and thankfully for the replay was in, and didn't look back after that, thanks be to God.
Mark, was there pressure on you because of Dara? And Mark, I know Fergal got that serious injury, that you're another O'Shea brother, and you kind of diversified. I won't say diversified, but you're a musician as well, I take it. You play the accordion.
I did, yeah. I played the accordion, yeah. I played it from, I suppose, I was in Tuck Shames back at home in Maria as a young boy, twice a week, and my father probably noticed that I was good at the Busca Ciol, the accordion, and he pursued that and got me lessons with Pat Nelligan, who was my teacher as well in Dingle CBS, maths and history teacher. And Pat, I used to go into Pat every Saturday and became good and started playing in the pubs and all of that, and enjoyed it, and it was great old crack.
And that's interesting that you come from your late dad, that even I reckon even if you didn't want to play football like the boys, he would encourage you to do what.
Yeah,
love.
I'd say so. Yeah, you know, and he definitely was. He was the fellow who was kind of pushing us, you know, for what we wanted to do. You know, he kind of let you at it then, but once you were happy, and I suppose he'd push the education definitely. You know, that was one of his big things. He wanted us all to do well and get to college and all of that. that was really the main thing that he was pushing, really, you know. When it came to the sports and stuff like that, then he was, once we were kind of happy, you know.
And you always had another supporter in the background as well, your mom.
Yeah.
Of Lisboa extraction?
Yeah, she was, I suppose, born in Lisboa and then moved to just west of Dingle, Ballarach, when she was young, and they relocated to a different farm there then. And she'd never go to the games. She always stayed at home. She was getting too nervous and she wouldn't even watch the game. She'd go away for a walk, and as soon as the game was over, and if she heard, got wind that we won or lost or whatever, she might watch the Sunday game that night, but never watch the game. She'd go into the church and say a prayer or whatever. But no, she couldn't. Even I'd say back in the day when she was going to the games with my dad watching Paddy playing, I'd say she even got nervous back then, do you know? So then I suppose when her three sons are playing, you're probably going to get very nervous. You know, that's natural. Even when I used to go to the games with my dad watching Darren Thomas playing, he got very nervous. You know, it was, you know, anytime,
that's only nature.
Oh yeah, anytime the boys got the ball, you'd feel this knee pushing into you, and he just, every time they got the ball, he lived for every pass they gave, and when they left off the ball, he'd kind of relax a small bit, but it was tough on him.
Before we go to our first break, since you've joined us, Mark, was there a realization there was a football dynasty that, you know, Paddy, what he achieved? You said your Uncle Tom as well. Did your dad play Kerry Junior?
Kerry Junior, yeah, played Kerry Junior.
When was there a realization, look, there's something special in this family? Not every family can produce players that can go off and play with Kerry, win All Ireland's. Was there a realization?
I don't think so. I think maybe when you're retired and all of that, and you look back at it, maybe, you know, when you're in it at the time, you still feel as though you're unproven, maybe, do you know. I was playing a few years before I won an All-Ireland, and there was always that feeling there that you're never really kind of believed in unless you've won an All-Ireland, and I suppose Paddy instilled that into us. But, and look, that's not the case. You know, there's plenty of incredible footballers in this county who've never achieved, you know, what they would possibly, you know, achieve. But look, it's something that you maybe look at when you retire and look back and say, geez, that, yeah, we had a good few years there, you know. And we're doing is passing on the jersey, really. You know, we see this year how good the Kerry team are. They brought it to new levels. And we're supporters now, watching them and bringing my young fellas to the game. And hopefully in years to come, you never know, they might enjoy the game themselves.
Absolutely. That's Mark O'Shea. We'll have plenty more from Mark after this break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel, Kerry's first B Corp hotel. Sustainability, community and warm hospitality under one roof.
You're very welcome back to Terrace Talk. We have Mark O'Shea in studio, John Kennedy and Liam Brosnan are waiting to the side as well, as we talk about Mark O'Shea's life so far and, of course, a lovely book, O'Shea, A Kerry Family, A Football Dynasty. Mark, we talk about pressure. There was no pressure. Then, your first, I suppose, taste of Kerry football. You said about the minor setup, but it was all about making senior level in Kerry, just like your two brothers.
Yeah.
Your first taste of it?
First taste of it would have been, I suppose, we won the county final in 2000, or 2001, sorry. And we beat Stax in the final. And I was knocking around, knocking on the doors, I suppose you could say. And I remember Paddy was in charge, obviously, and I felt as though I had to probably do a bit extra, you know, to get on and to prove myself, because the two boys were there already. But I think it was when we won that county championship that maybe then Paddy realised, okay, you know, there's a few of them there now. There's Dara Kinnaird, there's Aidan, there's Tomás, there's Dara, and now I was kind of in there then. But funny story, actually, the year previous, 2001, the famous Thurles games. I suppose you could call it on the training panel, but I couldn't break into the 24 in 2001. And we played Dublin, and that the replay, Tomás got sent off. I'd say he nearly landed Sinan Connell up into the stand with a tackle. And I looked over at my father, the poor man was traumatised looking at this. And of course, Tomás was sent off, and my head started thinking quickly, saying he's gone for the next game. And I said, I was putting two and two together, and I said, turned to my dad and I said, "Jeez," I said, "if we get over this," I said, "I'll be in for the All-Ireland semi-final. I could be on the panel." Well, he looked across at me, to this day I can see his face, and he was appalled at me, like, think my brother getting sent off, and all I could think of was myself, of course, that I could make the Kerry panel for the what turned out to be the meat game.
You need, hammering. But you needed that bit of selfishness.
Yeah, you do, yeah. And that was me. I was in for the meat game, number 24. And even, you know, to this day, looking back now, and I remember the morning of the game, going up in the lift after breakfast and sharing the lift with Maurice Fitzgerald, and a player I just looked up to throughout his career. And then you're sharing a lift with this fella, and you're, you know, part of the same panel of players as this fella. And look, that to me was just incredible. And I suppose one of the biggest regrets is that I never actually took to the same pitch with him. You know, I'd have loved to have played with him, but that was ended up being his last game, that Meath 2001 semi-final. So, and it was my first baptism of fire into it. I didn't play, obviously, but I was in then in 2002, but hadn't physically developed. And that was the thing, I suppose. The football skills were there, but physically I hadn't developed. And the year was going really good for me, you could say, up until the semi-final, first half against Cork, decent enough, but the second half, I didn't really play well. I think I was carted in maybe the 60th minute or something. And the question then was, would I start the final? And, you know, I did. And as I suppose it was based on the fact that I had a good year. I picked up a Man of the Match award in the qualifiers, and the year was going well. But that year I would have been inside marking the likes of Mike Frank, marking the likes of Gooch in training. And then you face up against Armagh, and you look at your marking the likes of Dermot Mars, and, you know, and completely different. I probably should have been on the likes of Johnny Crowley or the likes of Darragh Kinnaird to get myself, you know, similar type players. But yeah, look, we were in trouble that day, and I certainly was under pressure. And
Was Paddy under pressure in the sense that it's another O'Shea on a Kerry team?
I'd say Paddy...
That put extra pressure on you then to perform?
I'd say Paddy was good at dealing with the pressure, in terms of, you know, he wouldn't really listen to what people would say. He probably would listen to his backroom team, and, you know... But look, he was... I suppose I was going well in training, going well in the matches, but coming towards the end of the year... You know, you say semi-final, just when it gets important, really. That's when I started to go a bit downhill. And that year in particular, and it was a huge learning curve for me. It was massive. And what I learned from losing that final was I think, stood me the test of time, I think. And, like, we went in, I'll give you an example. We went in that game, I think we were 4 points up at halftime. And I was running into the dressing room and thinking, geez, we have this game. And then you fast forward 2 years later and you go in to the dressing room maybe 8 or 9 points up against Mayo, and your mindset is, geez, we have to keep going here now. This is nil all at half time. And that's the way my mindset was 2 years later. So I suppose, like I said as well, I alluded to the fact that the physical development wasn't there that first final in 2002.
You needed to bulk up.
I did. And I'd say, you know, I'd say it was only maybe 11 stone. And then if you fast forward maybe just even 10 years later, 2011 or, 12, you know, 13 stone, 2 stone heavier, you know, and that gives you a huge advantage if you're trying to deal with forwards. So that wasn't there in those early days.
Mark, you were a defender, but a fierce background and support act as well, in the sense that Paddy was one of the best defenders of all time, no different to Tomás. He made a name for himself. So... Did you want to put you had your own insight in how a defender, especially be it a cornerback or a wing back, should play? Yeah. How did you learn those skills, or did you look at previous great players? Or
yeah, well, look, I never played in the full back line until I'd say it was 2000. That was the first time I ever played in the full back line. I'd never played previous to that, so it was a learning curve for me. But I suppose growing up in the garden and trying to get a ball off Tomás or Dara Fergal, you'd wait until they take their hop or their solo, you'd try and get a hand in, you'd kind of learn little tricks like that, be it blocking or whatever. So from an early age, I'd say that I was handy enough at that side of it. So maybe that's, I don't know, Fergal or Seamus McGarrett at the time maybe saw maybe that I could play in the inside line. It was probably a needy area for the Gaeltacht at the time. And little did I think, you know, growing up where I was playing wing forward, centre forward, wing back, that I'd end up playing in the full back line. You know, just didn't think that would happen. But look, when I started off, Seamus Moynihan had gone back into full back in 2000. So, you know, you'd have seen players being able to adapt. And I think Mick O'Dwyer's great Kerry team, all those players, Ger Power, I think the versatility that players like Ger Power, Paddy Lynch, all these players showed, Shawnee Welsh, that could play in defence and attack. You look at the other great counties, the Graham Gerrities, these guys, the Brendan O'Reillys, you know, so no matter where I was asked to play, I'd go and play.
That cues me up nicely. Would you ever have liked Mark to play on the 40? Why say this? There's a humour side to this as well. I met a man, I met a man during the week, and I said I was having you on Terrastock, that I was covering for Ivan on Terrastock on Monday night. And he said he'd love to have seen you play in the 40 because of your style of play, your movement. You weren't like this tiger cornerback coming out and just getting rid of the ball, that you could go past the player. And the funny side of all this, he said, and even he thought you were too good looking to be a defender. That was a pure insult to other defenders around the county. But that was the humorous side of it. But would you have ever liked to play in that half-hour line?
Oh, yeah, I would have loved it. I had played with the club there. Played with the club there, I suppose, around the 2010 period to 2012-13. I would have played a good few years centre-forward with the club and enjoyed it there, loved it there. And again, even centre-back. Actually, funny enough, I did play... I played most of the 2005 year centre-back. That year, I was given a job in the Munster final on Conor McCarthy, the Cork centre-forward, and we played him again in the semi-final. And the replay, was it? I could be getting my years mixed up, but most of the 2005 year, I played centre-back, and the final played centre-back for the first 15 minutes on Brian McGuigan, and I was moved to the wing then on Doher, but loved the half-back line. And, you know, you get to, I suppose, get on the ball a lot more, whereas the full-back line, you know, it's those quick darts, you know, and you have to read the game more, I suppose, in the full-back line, knowing when it's going to come. And I always make the point to young players that the best footballers, when they get the ball, they look up and their first instinct straight away is to kick. And, you know, if I was inside in Fitzgerald Stadium and I was marking the Gooch or Mike Frank or Johnny Crowley or whatever, and if I looked up and if I saw Seamus Moynihan or Dara or Galvin or Declan or Tomás, you knew these fellas were going to kick the ball straight in. They weren't going to be soloing, and so I had to be out in front. So that's something that I definitely noticed, and especially then against different counties. Cork, I always felt, were a running team, that their half-back line in particular, the Kinsellas and the Noel O'Leary's, they used to bring the ball up to a certain line, and you knew you could stand off until maybe they had reached their hour 45, and then you had to be really tight. So it was different with the different counties, and you kind of adapted to the playing style. So My point is, when I was playing in the full back line, it was very much like you were learning the whole time of what teams are going to, and of course the famous Donegal team, I'm going on a bit, but when they that counter-attacking play, then when they went, there was oceans of space in front of myself and a McFadden, you know, so all the different counties had so much different styles of play that we had to be on our toes.
Mark, was it built into players like yourself then, if you were playing the half back line or different to Tomás, that if you felt you kicked one or two points from the half-back position, that there could be a change, the wing forward could be taken off because suddenly you're doing what he should be doing to you, and you'd feel that maybe the guy coming on wouldn't be as good?
Yeah, the way I'd look at it is, I used to always watch, say, I used to pick up the papers and I used to look at if I was marking whoever it may be, Cullum O'Neill or whoever, a Michael Meehan, and I'd check how they did the week previous or 2 weeks previous, and if they were taken off or had an off day, I'd be really on my guard then, because I often felt inter-county footballers never played bad 2 weeks in a row unless they were going through a rut, so I'd have my guard up big time then. Or if they had an outstanding game, then I was really, really up for it, because I felt they needed to be brought down a peg or two, maybe. So it was, I suppose, different strokes for different folks, you know. But I would have done a lot of, I suppose, my own homework. Watch the players that you'd be marking. Watch the way they'd run. Watch the way they'd turn. Were they good over their head? And I suppose I would have put a lot of work into that myself down through the years.
In those years, who would have given you the biggest amount of trouble when you were marking? Because you were meeting counties every other year.
Yeah. Loads of fellas. You could start with Cork straight away and you could look at Donogh O'Connor, Colm O'Neill, Kerrigan afterwards. I remember in 2010 in the Munster final in Killarney, a game where I felt I had done well enough, and then after the game was over, I'd say he had kicked 3 points. So then the replay below in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, I was really up for that game, and I said I was going to go the other way now, like you had said, and put this fella on the back foot. And my plan was to make a couple of runs in the first half and try and get him to follow me. And it actually worked out on the day, got up in the end of that game to kick an equaliser. And sometimes it works for you that way, other times it doesn't. But in terms of then, obviously in-house you had the Gooch, who was the toughest draw you'd ever get. But then you had the two Brogan brothers, Michael Meehan, Andy Moran from Mayo. He was really tough, very tough draw, because probably one of the most honest forwards you'll ever come across. He'd make a run, a lateral run, he wouldn't get it, he'd be looking again, he'd make a second one, he'd make 7 or 8 of them. And all the time, he was still looking and running, and we were gassed, and next thing he'd win the ball and he'd go straight at you. So to answer your questions, the hardest players to play against were the fellas who'd go at you and had both feet. And you know, even you look at the modern day and they're there still. You've got the Conor Callaghans and of course our own man David Clifford.
Nightmare to mark. Please keep those comments coming through to us. We have 2 books. Mark has willingly signed his signature to both books, and we'll be giving them away for the best comments. So plenty more to come from Mark O'Shea.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry.
Brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel, Kerry's first B Corp hotel. Sustainability, community and warm hospitality under one roof.
You're very welcome back here to Terrace Talk. Mark O'Shea in studio, John Kennedy and Liam Brosnan stay with us as well. Mark, can I ask you about the relationship between your brothers? What's it like? Is there a lovey-dovey sending each other texts every day? Like I take it you have your own apps group.
We do, yeah.
I don't want to hear what messages you're sending to one. Are they sent to Askaelga or are they in English?
It depends, you know. You'd be talking sometimes Askaelga, but mostly in English. But yeah, Tomás said the night of the launch, he said, we're not really a lovey-dovey family, Tomás said, and the Gooch was there, and he says, I'm not sure about that. He says, I remember having a scuffle with Mark one night, and I could see Tomás in the distance and he coming, and Dara hadn't got going yet, but he was in the coming as well. So I'd say when things broke out on the field, all right, we would have had each other's backs. But we'd be on the phone a lot with each other. You know, I've spoken to all 3 of them now today. It is just, we'd be chatting a lot, all right, definitely. You know, we'd be, I suppose, close growing up. But then I suppose Tomás is in...
Who's the dominant of the 4 brothers?
I suppose they'd all be strong enough characters.
Dara,
I suppose, yeah.
You're all afraid of Dara?
I don't know. I don't think we're afraid of anyone, really. But no, he's I sure Dara's a proper character, as we know. Fergal, I suppose, he's been a leader in his own way with the management side of it, you know. I definitely have looked up to all 3 of them, to be totally honest with you, Tim, because they were older than me, 3 older brothers. So would have definitely looked up to all 3 of them, and what they've achieved has been outstanding, you know. So lucky to be part of the family.
Little mention in the book about Dara. You were saying that forwards, they've been replaced, no different to the Gooch coming after Fitzy coming after Mikey Sheehan. Now we have David Clifford backs, no different to yourself. I suppose the likes of the Gavin Whites of this world is an outstanding back, and I'm sure you admire him. Dara, we've often said it, and you've said it here, John, and I'm sure you said it, Liam, with some great midfielders. We had David Moran after Dara, different midfielders down. Has he ever been replaced? Like, fair enough, you could get a midfielder, win it, physicality, but Dara he had something else. Dara, like, if Dara could see a team dominating, Dara knew what to do.
Look, I think if
he's a serious warrior, but has he ever been? And it'll be no harm to say you're his brother.
I don't think so. Look, I know there'd be probably a bit of bias in me when I say this, but I think if someone was to ask me who were the best players I ever played with, it would be Dara and Seamus Moynihan. Because I think if you wanted to win a game, if you wanted to go out and win a game, you needed those two fellas on your side. And I think he was a warrior. And I think, you know, he's unlucky not to have two Footballer of the Year awards. In 2002, he played the best football I've ever seen in that 2002 year. Unfortunately, didn't get over the line against Armagh. He was captain, and it was, I suppose, a year where our dad passed away. So it would have been lovely to have seen him lift Sam. But look, that's sport, and you get on with it. But again, in 2006, he was just majestic, you know, and he was the spiritual leader of that team, there's no doubt. And, I mean, you look at it and the longevity that he showed, you'd say something, you know, about, you know, playing corner forward or wherever. But this fella played midfield for 15, 16, 17 years at the top. I think what he achieved was outstanding. And there's no player that he came up against that I would have been worried when he was in the form that he was in. There was a year or two there, all right, where he got a very bad injury in 0-3 with his ankle. And for that year, and you could even bring it on to next year, 0-4, he wasn't himself those 2 years, you could say, due to that injury. But he rediscovered that form again, and in 0-5, and, you know, he's had a phenomenal career.
Mention of managers, you know, you played under a number of managers. Paddy was there when the late Paddy, when you started. You've been under Pat O'Shea, Jack O'Connor. They all have different styles, but and we'll speak about it later on, Mark, that you're gone into minor management yourself. That is it difficult? Do players get on with managers? They feel hard done by if they're dropped? It's in everyone's, I suppose, ambition or want to get on a first 15, then you feel you're hard done by. How did you get on with managers?
I get on well with them. I got on very well with them. I think.
Did they get on with you?
I think so. I think so. Genuinely, I think so. I think I know where you're going as well, Tim. But I think so. They. I suppose Paddy, you know, when I went in there, I very much kept away from Paddy, to be honest with you, because, you know, I just wanted to kind of do my thing. And then, you know, I'd only had 3 years with Paddy, never won an All-Ireland, unfortunately, with him. Then Jack came in, and I suppose the thing with Jack was that Jack wanted to build a panel, really, I think. And I think Jack identified, number one, that I needed to put on a bit of bulk, and number two, he needed to strengthen his panel. So we were off with the Gaeltacht at the time in the All-Ireland series and got as far as the All-Ireland Club Final. And when I came back in after St. Paddy's Day, I wasn't on the team. Now, Aidan O'Mahony and Paul Galvin had broke their way onto the team, and Jack had done a great few months there, I suppose, blooding new players. And we've seen what Aidan O'Mahony and Paul Galvin have gone on to do, like, you know, and incredible. So for a few months there, I was in the outside looking in, and I had to prove myself to Jack and show him, you know, that I was worthy of a place in the team. And I think it was only for an injury to Seamus Moynihan for that Munster Championship. I was out and got back in, thankfully. But it was, you know, you had to prove yourself. And again, I got dropped with Fitzmaurice, I think, Eamon in 2014. And that was a tough one because I didn't see that one coming. But again, look, I think the managers and the management teams, they make these calls on what they see. And I never give out to a manager for a decision they made. Of course, you'd question stuff, but you knew who the manager was and you had the respect for the manager.
Mark, you've won 5 All-Irelands at senior level. You've won 6, haven't you? Because the
I won 5 and I lost 5.
Lost 5.
Yeah, I lost 6. I lost one with the club as
one
well.
One with
yeah,
the club, yeah. That's right. That hurts.
That does, but I think if you play football long enough, you'll have more bad days than good days. And I think that regardless of the ones you win, I think when we lost in 0-2, came back in 0-4 and won, and I think then lost in 0-5, came back in 6 and won at 7, lost in 8, came back, won at 9. So I think sometimes when we lost, it almost gave us this energy to go on the following year and maybe right the wrongs. I think that certainly was the case with us anyway.
Was there hurt there then when you said goodbye to the team, to Just? Because there's this thing about being a Kerry footballer, I knowing you, you know, the John Kennedys of this world, Liam when he was a minor, you wore the Kerry jersey. Is it very hard coming off those tracks then and to deal with, you're like the man in the street then?
It is, it is. I certainly found it tough. I there was a kind of a void, I suppose you could call it. But in fairness to the club, an Gaeltacht, Conall O'Cruillíoch was asked to be manager, and he was cute out. He asked me to be co-manager slash player, joint manager slash player, and he knew, I suppose, he'd get the buy-in from me then. And we ended up going in a great year. We won the intermediate, and it was a good learning curve for me then as well. I suppose my introduction to management and also playing, and 3 wonderful years with the club brought us up to senior. And they're on a similar journey now again at the moment. So that's where probably one door closed and another door opened, and thankfully we're still going anyway.
Time is running so fast with you, Mark. I'll take the last break of the evening.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry,
sponsored by Meadowlands Hotel Tralee.
You're very welcome back to Terrace Talk. I was on the break there. Mark said, you didn't mention my book. I'm talking about it, Mark, with the last hour. And I'm sure it's in all good bookshops. Mark, straight question. Any regrets in life?
Not really, no. No, can't think of one really, to be honest with you. From a sporting...
Sporting stroke,
yeah,
life.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I think everything happens for a reason, you know. And we've got our health and we're lucky and we're above the ground, so...
Do you check in with yourself?
I do, yeah. I do.
What's that, meditation?
No, I don't think so. No, I just, I suppose, you'd be just, I suppose, thinking to yourself if everything is going okay and all that, you know. But, yeah, life is good.
Life is good. Mark, Tomás is with the under-20s. You are now the Kerry minor manager. Is it always something that was on your mind once you left inside those white lines as a player?
Yeah, I suppose. I think that, you know, I mentioned at the start of the interview that, you know, one of the things that I wanted to do growing up was to be a Kerry minor, you know, and I know that there's great young players in this county, and obviously to manage a Kerry team is an absolute privilege and something that I'm absolutely honoured in doing. I know John has done, he's managed the Kerry minors as well, and it's a huge privilege, and You're dealing with the best players, really, you know, and it's something that I'm looking forward to. I'm learning off this man, even asking him questions about, I suppose, winter football and when the ground hardens and all of that. And you know, we're I suppose, learners of the game still, but trying to teach these young fellas something to become better players and develop them and make sure that they go on and hopefully someday develop them into Kerry seniors.
Quick word to you, John. Any advice for Mark where you've been there? You've been there in good days, bad days?
Yeah, I think it's about enjoying it. You know, it's different. You're worrying about the squad now, whereas when you were playing, it was yourself. But I think it's this man has huge experience, and it's a huge honour, like you said, to manage the inter-county team, whatever level it is. And I think the main thing is to enjoy it while you're there, because it goes fast. And success isn't all about bringing the Tom Markham Cup back. It's about developing the players for down the road. And I think there's fierce satisfaction. Liam and myself saw it with the under-21s as well. The amount of lads that went on and won senior All-Irelands, that's satisfaction in itself.
You had a couple of bad nights, yourself and John Kennedy, from a management point of view. Any advice, Liam, to Mark on that?
Yeah.
Thanks, Tim.
Well, Mark said it there himself not too long ago. In football, unfortunately, you are going to have probably more downs than ups. But you just go and enjoy it. And just him, like, when I was a young fella, I was going into the dressing rooms with Charlie Nelligan and Mikey Sheehy and these guys. You can imagine the young fellas coming into the dressing rooms, and you have John Kennedy there as your manager, and now you have Mark O'Shea. But that's the legacy that we have in Kerry, that we can bring in guys like this. And especially, and minors, a lovely age group, because it's their first time wearing, as I say, a proper Kerry jersey, and they will really be looking forward to it, and they'll give you everything. It gets harder as we go up along the lines, as we know, John, but it's just they'll come in awe. And if Mark asks them to climb the roof of the complex behind in Corns, they'll do that. And you know, and I think with his management team with him, I think we're looking for as Weegee said one day when we were here, John. I remember that interview. We sat at the table, and he said, "What way did he put it again?" He said, "There's a winning. You have to win in Kerry.
Yeah, you have to
that's
win
what
Kerry.
Everything is about in Kerry. But when you have a management team like that, it's a good start.
And Mark, you realise that's the pressure in Kerry as well, that it's a results game. As you well know, even during Paddy's time, you could have 8 All-Ireland medals, you could have been manager, and you one day things go wrong. You have to turn off the noise on the outside, I take it?
Oh, you do, I suppose. But
you also got to respect it.
You do, of course. But as Paddy himself always, you say a pat in the back is only 6 inches away from a kick in the backside. So, I suppose John made a good point, and it's about bringing these players through and developing players and you know, I suppose the thrill that she saw in watching these fellas go on and win their All-Irelands is massive. And to know that you're maybe somewhat part of that and in the development is massive. And look, I always say it, we're so lucky that we come from the county that we come from and be able to produce the players that we produce. And it's something, I think it's in our DNA. And Liam mentioned it there. He alluded to the fact that putting on that sacred garment, that green and gold jersey, I think we stand a lot taller when that jersey goes on. And it's a sacred jersey, and it's something that I'm really passionate about and looking forward to getting stuck in with these fellas.
One final say in your book, I take it, that great line, it's an all.
Yeah, it's in all the good bookshops in Dingle and Tralee and Killarney, and it's in O'Mahony's and Tralee and Easton. So if you're out there and about and looking for a present, no better one, I suppose, Tim.
Look, you'll probably be a politician and a salesman one day.
I doubt that.
Thanks to Will and Mark. Best of luck as well with the Kerry Miners.
Thanks,
John Kennedy. Thanks, Liam Bross. Everyone contributed to the great producer. That is Niamh Daly. Up next, the famous Mary Conroy Nipper with Togue Sauce.